Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Culp, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, October 15th.
Yes.
Week number 31.
Yes.
Of the show.
272 days since the coronavirus was declared a pandemic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, I just heard that this morning.
Okay.
Well, so we know it's true.
We know. Yeah, I mean, like, if you heard it, it's got to be right.
If you heard it, it's got to be
about
true.
Right? But yeah, okay. We're glad that you're with us, everybody. Thank you very much. We have a great show lined up today. We're going to be getting an update from the New Mexico Activities Association. And also we're going to be talking with a nurse practitioner from San Juan Health Partners Pediatrics about children mm-hmm. and how they're dealing with all this stuff. So that's what's coming up
Outdoor today. Respiratory clinic.
Yeah, exactly.
For all of your respiratory needs.
True.
And if you're below the age of 18.
Thank you. That's really about how it is. That's
yeah,
true.
So yeah.
There you go. But let's go to our first guest.
Cool.
Who is standing by, ready to talk to us. This is Dusty Young, the Associate Director of the New Mexico Activities Association, and he's on the phone with us this morning from his offices in Albuquerque. Mr. Young, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you for joining us, and of course we wanted to have you on because there was a big announcement last week about fall sports, and certainly with some of the COVID numbers we're seeing from around our state, they don't look good, and so I guess can you give us just an update of where things stand now with fall sports and other activities? I think most things have been postponed, isn't that correct?
That is correct. I wish you were having me on the air so I could talk about our cross-country meets and volleyball matches that were going on, but unfortunately due to the public health orders that we've seen here in New Mexico, we did have to postpone all of our fall sports seasons. The one thing that we do want to stress is the word postpone. We are still planning to have cross country and volleyball during the spring semester. We haven't come up with the exact calendar or timeline for that as of yet, but one thing since this whole pandemic started, we have stressed is we want to make sure that our students have the opportunity to play any and every sport that they want during the 2021 school year.
Very good. And so with that being said, I guess I know you'd already postponed some fall sports to the spring. Football comes to mind. And so is there a danger of trying to cram too much into then maybe the spring semester, the spring months, if you try to move everything into the spring? Obviously, something's got to give.
So, I wouldn't call it a danger. I would just say it's not optimal. This whole pandemic, I think we've seen things that are not optimal. And, of course, having 13 sports seasons in one semester definitely isn't the best case scenario. So we're doing everything we can to try and limit overlaps of seasons as much as possible. However, it's not completely possible in every situation. So again, we're doing what we can, and knowing that really the number one priority still is to offer all 13 sports that we typically do. That's one thing that we've stressed to our schools, and our schools have stressed to us that they want to make sure that kids can participate in everything that they want to play.
Yeah, that's good. And we also know, of course, that kids usually play a wide variety of sports. And so some of those were in the fall and then in the spring. And that might get complex. But when I ask about college scouting, now that sports are postponed to the spring, how that's affecting our New Mexico seniors, thinking about college scholarships and how much might ride on that for some students.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, the same thing happened last spring when we had to shut down. That was one of the hardest days, or probably the hardest day I've had in my 16-year career at the NMAA, was telling our spring sport athletes that their season had been completely canceled. Those seniors that have worked hard for 4 years, it was kind of the culmination of their high school careers, and they didn't get to finish it off. So I know that was tough on the seniors then, and I'm sure our seniors are thinking the same thing right now. I know everyone was very excited that we were trying to get our fall sports season started last week or a couple weeks ago. Now we're kind of back to square one and in a holding pattern. And at the same time, you know, obviously we feel for all of our kids out there, but especially those seniors. Those are the ones that are in the probably the most difficult situation, just because this is what they've been waiting for, their senior year. You know, building on everything they've done in the classroom and on the playing field, and now it's kind of in limbo. So we definitely feel for those folks, and we do try every day to get those kids back safely into athletics and activities, and hopefully, you know, you'll have me back in a couple months or 3 months, and we actually are starting high school sports.
That's great. And I want to talk about, so if we persist in the same pattern and it becomes the case where certain sports are not able to maybe continue, is there a differentiation being made between sports that involve a lot of contact and sports that don't? You know, cross country obviously involves less contact, maybe even swimming since you're in chlorinated pool. I don't know. But are there differences being considered between different types of sports?
Yeah, I think every sport is different, and that's why, you know, we had planned to have just a couple sports this fall semester, cross country being one of those, and volleyball. Those are much different than soccer and football, which we had postponed several months ago. So, yeah, I think each sport is taken case by case. You know, one other factor to consider that I know the governor's office has had concerns with is indoor sports. Those are a lot different than, you know, say a cross country meet where you're running out in the outdoors, and there's a lot more space between competitors and you know, workers and spectators and that sort of thing. So yeah, we definitely look at each sport differently. Some of our higher risk sports we did of course move to the spring semester. One sport that folks haven't talked about a lot, but is probably our most high risk sport, that's wrestling. And that's something that we pushed back all the way to April for our start date, in hopes that, you know, being the highest risk sport, the further we push it back, hopefully we'll still be able to get it in this year.
Very good. And I wanted to ask, too, Mr. Young, about other activities, because, of course, the NMAA deals with high school athletics, but also other activities. And so are there some things that are still being allowed to happen? We know that choir and singing certainly maybe not, but bands and maybe other types of activities, is there some light at the end of this tunnel that you can tell us about?
Yeah, so we are encouraging our activity groups to keep moving on. Of course, when they do that, they have to do it under our guidelines, our return to play guidelines, and the public health order set by the governor. But as an example, JROTC, that's one of the activities that we sanction through the NMAA, which we have 25 of those now, 25 activities outside of our traditional sports. But JROTC, marksmanship is a big piece of JROTC, and they're able to hold virtual competitions. So we're encouraging that to keep those kids involved. Obviously, with the public health orders, you can't have large groups, so those pods, so to speak, you can have four kids now with one instructor, and they can go through their marksmanship progression, and then they post their scores and they compare them to a school that's doing the same thing on their own campus. So yeah, we are encouraging those activities that can hold virtual competitions to do so, and still they can obviously get together under the guidelines and have their own local kind of practices or workouts, so to speak, but at the same time, if they can incorporate a virtual competition, we're definitely encouraging that as well.
Very good. And I know that your director, Sally Marquez, is meeting, I think, this morning with the Public Education Department, so I imagine there's a lot of attempts for coordination between what you're hearing from the governor's office and what you're able to do with, of course, the school districts around the state. Is there any other information? I know that the meeting is happening right now, so I know you don't know what's going on at that meeting, but is there any words for our listeners and viewers this morning about what to be watching for in the next maybe few weeks to come?
Well, I think, you know, the NMAA is really on the same page with the Public Education Department and our superintendents that we're trying to safely get kids back into school and into extracurricular athletics and activities. So that's really, I mean, there are weekly meetings that occur with the superintendents and our office and the PED, and really the goal is to see what we can do to get our kids back into education and in the classroom, on the playing field, because obviously that's where we want kids to be. This isn't the norm. We're trying to fight through this as best we can, and like I said earlier, it's definitely not optimal, but our educational leaders across the state are doing everything they can to try and make that happen as soon as possible.
Got it. Well, Mr. Young, we appreciate your time this morning and speaking with us, and we do hope to have you back in a few weeks with some maybe better news, and we look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate you all and the things that you're doing to promote kids and education and education-based athletics and activities.
Very good. Well, thank you again very much. That is Dusty Young. He is the Associate Director of the New Mexico Activities Association, speaking with us this morning on KSJE.
So, good, helpful information.
Yeah. I mean, I think, unfortunately, they're in a tough spot, just like the schools are in a tough spot, I think, with looking at the numbers that we're going to look at in just a moment. I think anyone who looks at these lines, these graphs that we're going to show you, can maybe see why some of these decisions are being made for our state, because they're definitely not going in the direction we want them to go.
Right.
So,
can I guess what high school sport or activity you were involved in?
You want to guess?
AV club. No.
Yeah. Actually, because that was the that was the radio club.
Exactly.
We had a radio station.
Audio visual club.
At my high school.
Yeah.
So I was
that it?
AV club. Yeah.
AV club.
It was more radio club than AV club. Because the AV club was even nerdier
than,
you can imagine,
than radio.
Than the radio
it's
club.
It's hard to
was.
Imagine that given the two of us in this room.
Yes. But good job.
Thanks.
Yes. And I don't even know if I want to guess what club you were in.
What kind of high school activities I was involved in?
I'll take that under advisement. I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Okay. There you go, everybody.
But let's take they a were look pretty at, innocuous. Okay.
Were they? Really?
Debate? Yes.
Oh, debate.
Yeah.
Of course.
There of course.
Of course. There you go. Hashtag Megan. Here we go. So we want to pass along, of course, the flu shot clinics that are coming up as a COVID program, but we certainly want to remind folks to get their flu vaccines. There's another one coming up, of course, here at the college next Wednesday, the 21st. It is free with insurance, $20 without insurance. Again, it's on Wednesday, the 21st, 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. It's a drive-through. Just roll up your sleeve and fill out a form.
Roll up your sleeve.
Off they go.
Be poked.
That's what they do. That's right. But that is here at San Juan College. San Juan Regional Medical Center also planning a couple of drive-through flu shot clinics as well in our community. So we want to make sure we mention those to you. The first one will be a week from Saturday on October 24th from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. in the North Visitor parking lot, which is Lot F, the corner of Maple and Schwartz at San Juan Regional Medical Center drive-through clinic. The next one on Halloween, October 31st. So 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. I don't know if they'll be giving candy and a poke.
I tried to tell Mr. Jeff Bourgeois.
Did you?
That we needed to give out candy.
Mm.
Remember that? I asked for lollipops.
Yeah, you did. And then he hasn't been on the show since.
Yeah, that's, so. That's true. That was the last time he came on the show.
Okay.
That media is getting pretty hardcore. They're demanding lollipops.
See how you are?
See anyway, how you are?
Saturday, October 31st, 9 to noon. Again, same location. Wear a mask. Bring your cell phone is what they're asking. But again, this is a free flu shot clinic at San Juan Regional Medical Center as well.
Right.
So we want to pass that information along. Also, public health testing. Again, this week, the next one tomorrow here at San Juan College, 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. And then there's the schedule for Saturday at the public health office. 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. on South Miller Avenue in Farmington, Saturday, October 17th. And then next week, we have, a couple of opportunities on Monday twice, right? Monday morning, 7:30 to 9 a.m. at San Juan College. And then again, Monday afternoon, 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. We haven't seen a double.
A double whammy.
Same day, right?
It could be related to the numbers we're going to see in a bit.
That's very possible. So Monday twice, Wednesday morning, again, October 21st, 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. So again, you can come, get your COVID test, go sit out for half an hour, and come back, get your flu shot.
That's right.
Same place.
I know.
It's exactly the same place.
Look at that. Pack a snack.
There you are. And then, of course, Friday, October 23rd, here at San Juan College. So again, it's 7:30 a.m. To 9 a.m. And that's getting cut off. And I apologize for our video viewers if they can't see all that. But technical.
So it goes. Technical difficulties.
You know, sometimes the show is so full, something runs off the screen.
There you go.
It does. That's right. Again, other information about the State Health Department tests, 327-4461. If you need help to get registered for your test, 327-4461 is the phone number there. All right. And now here we are at Johns Hopkins.
Yes, here we are. So we have the United States confirmed cases at 7,917,297. And we have U.S. confirmed deaths at 216,904.
Right. And we are still the top country of infections.
United States exceptionalism.
Ouch. But here we go. Yeah. But we see India and Brazil pretty close behind at 7.3 million India, 5.1 million Brazil, Russia at 1.3, and then they kind of go down from there.
Yes.
So, but that's the current numbers from Johns Hopkins. They've been tracking this since the very beginning, as you mentioned. How many days ago?
272.
Yikes. Okay, there we go. These are the other numbers, again, that we like to share because they show more of an overview of averaging of cases, right? We know New Mexico's had a number of record-setting case numbers. The last one was yesterday that we'll talk about in just a moment. But you can see that kind of pink line that is now higher than it was at the peak of our infections and cases back in...
Prior peak,
thank you, late July.
Yes.
And now we're above that. For the average.
Are you shocked? I was shocked.
Yes.
Truly.
I was shocked that, it went off the scale almost.
Yeah.
It's really peaking.
That's not actually a fault of our technological difficulties. It actually is pushing off the scale.
It really is. Yeah. And so, again, the pink line is state of New Mexico numbers. The blue line at the very bottom is San Juan County. And the green line is the Navajo Nation numbers. But, It's not good for our state.
It's not good.
I think, obviously, if you heard the governor, and she's going to talk again today, this is where she's coming from.
Yep.
Because of these numbers. So that's that graph. And then in San Juan County, again, specifically, our cases and our deaths. The deaths are still low, which we're grateful for. The yellow line are the cases. And again, if you remember last week, Thursday, we talked a little bit about that plateau for the last couple of weeks. They were at 58, and we were hoping that it would go back down. But it didn't,
right.
And it went up a little bit now to 81.
81
is the number of cases in the county over the course of 7 days or so, and so that's where we are. So again, we're heading back up. We're not as bad as we were again in May, but I know the warning bells are being tolled because these numbers could get out of control.
The warning bells.
Yeah, the warning bells.
Yeah. As opposed to the death bells.
Yes.
Limited tolls on the death bells, mega tolls on the warning bells.
That's it.
Yes.
There you are. So that's what's going on there. So state numbers, as we mentioned, this was what we're talking about, right? Our peak yesterday, the most cases reported in one single day in New Mexico was yesterday at 577 new cases for a total now of 34,290 since the pandemic began. Of those, San Juan County had a pretty high number as well. We haven't seen 25 in quite a while. 25 new cases in our county for a total of 3,508. 3 deaths in New Mexico yesterday. Thankfully, none of those were in San Juan County. And our recoveries increased by another 167, that they're now over 19,000 recoveries in New Mexico.
Whew. Okay.
So yeah, those 577 counties, are concerning. Obviously.
Yeah, it's a record.
And so here are the other numbers from the Navajo Nation. They had 40 new cases yesterday, no additional deaths across the Navajo Nation. Their total number of cases now 10,780. And then the new public health order, as was announced by the governor earlier this week, that go into effect until tomorrow. And maybe things will change today. I can't imagine they may not.
If they change, they're going to change in a different direction than what we usually see.
Even more lockdowns, perhaps.
Yes.
We'll see.
Yes.
But the new health order effective tomorrow, 10 p.m. closing time for businesses who serve alcohol. Hotel occupancy rates decrease down to 60% or 25%, depending on if the hotel has gone through some COVID training for their employees. Travel quarantines for arriving visitors from high-risk states remain, and mass gatherings are now reduced from 10 to 5 people.
Okay.
So that's where things stand with the latest
5 people.
Health order 5.
Not really a mass gathering anymore.
Not really, by definition. Yeah. No.
No.
That's
no.
True. So exactly. So that's what we have.
Yeah.
And we'll see what the governor says today and see if anything else changes. But that is the latest numbers. So there you go. You ready for our second guest?
I am.
Okay. Let me see where I put her. Because she's
this is a pre-record, just to be clear.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Where I put her? Which file are you in?
Right. Where did she go? So hold on 1 second. We're going to double check.
I can give a vaccine update while we do that.
Do you have one?
Well, okay. The main update is discussing the logistics, which is obviously difficult since we don't have a vaccine yet. But there is a push now. There's a federal push for states to get their act in order as far as what the plan is, which, again, very difficult when you don't have a vaccine. But the big question, the big pressing question is, should it be a top-down or a bottom-up approach? Meaning, should this be a federal plan that then is instituted all in one fell swoop at all 50 states? Or should the states be given agency in how they decide to roll out the vaccines?
Interesting.
Yeah, and, you know, there is precedent. So the H1N1 vaccine, which we actually haven't talked about since that occurred, and I had forgotten that there was a vaccine, actually, during H1N1. And in that case, it was a bottom-up approach. The states decided. There's good reason for that. Obviously, different states have a lot of different logistics involved.
True.
So...
Interesting.
There you
okay.
go.
Well, we'll see what happens.
That's it.
Okay.
Thanks, Bloomberg News.
There you go. All right. I found our interview for
Excellent.
Our next guest. We talked to her yesterday. So here you go, everybody, our latest conversation. Joining us now to talk a little bit about pediatrics is Jessica Conklin, who is with Salmon Health Partners Pediatrics. She's joining us on the phone. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you with us, and we wanted to get started by asking you about an event that's coming up, right? This is an outdoor respiratory clinic, pediatric respiratory clinic, correct? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, no, and so we have had this up and running now for a little while, and of course, you know, with anything that is new, we're still kind of getting the kinks worked out. But what we are doing is you can call for any concerns that you have for any type of respiratory illness. And instead of seeing you inside the clinic, we are actually seeing you outside in what we call our respiratory clinic. And this is Monday through Friday, 1 to 4:30 at this time. We may, you know, have plans for expansion as needed. But all you need to do is call for an appointment, and you show up like you would if you needed a regular appointment in the clinic. And you call, you get registered, and then at that point, a medical assistant will then touch base with you and have a few more questions for you. They will then direct you to a carport that we have set outside, and they will tell you which parking spot to park in, and we'll have you pull in there, and at that point the medical assistant will come out, gather vital signs, temperature, and then enter that into the system, and at that point that designated provider for the respiratory clinic that afternoon will come out and see your child in the car. And so it's the care is basically the same. We are just really transitioning that care that we would have normally done inside the clinic to the car outside to kind of just help keep you safe, the staff safe, and the community safe.
I see. And so with that being said, then this would be maybe for any type of respiratory problem. Obviously COVID comes to mind, but it certainly isn't limited just to that question, correct?
No, absolutely. And so, and that's, you know, and it's been difficult because we really just don't know, you know, just with the way that kids present. Is this COVID? Is this a normal cold virus? Could this be the flu or RSV? Because those seasons are definitely coming up very soon. And we do typically have a very busy flu and RSV season. And so just in general, just kind of just to keep everybody safe, we're just going to go ahead and see any of those who are potentially sick with any type of respiratory illness, runny nose, cough, fevers. We will see you outside. And then that way we can keep the clinic for those well visits so that we can continue to do those well visits and vaccinate those babies, which is super important at this time of year.
Yes, for sure. And I want to switch gears and talk COVID specific. It's been a while since we talked to Dr. Harrington about pediatrics in particular. At that time, there was a lot of talk about this multi-inflammatory syndrome and just different ways that they were seeing symptoms manifest in kiddos. But like I said, that was long ago. So I'm interested in any updates that we have on that.
No, great question. And so with anything new, with this just being so novel, we really just don't know. And there hasn't been significant changes in what we do know. What we are seeing, though, is so these kiddos who are presenting with that multi-system inflammatory disorder related to COVID is that they tend to be more of the older child, early adolescents. So it's really kind of not affecting our neonates or our infants as much. And so we have seen that trend where it tends to be kind of the 8 to 10-year-old age group that we do see it the most. But in terms of presentation, that really hasn't changed much. Our big concerns are fevers that are lasting longer than 4 days. We can also see variant rashes that they can present with. And then what is new for this, because it does present much like another illness we know a little bit about, Kawasaki's, is that these kids can have more of a GI-type illness with vomiting and diarrhea that we don't typically see in the Kawasaki illness.
Very good. And I do have a follow-up question about symptom in spreading. So that kids are, it seems, known to spread the virus in equal rates as adults, but that they do not tend to come down with as obvious or severe as symptoms. Is that true?
Yes, so that is kind of a newer theory that is coming to light. And once again, we really just need to wait for more research, more data to substantiate this. We have seen older research in other European countries where they had thought that children maybe were not getting the illness at all and therefore were not spreading it. However, we have had seen some data recently that may indicate that even though they may not be getting the illness themselves or may not be getting very sick at all with the illness, is that they may potentially be holding this virus in their respiratory tract with that potential to spread it to others. But once again, this is all kind of new, and so we just definitely need much more research and more data to really determine whether or not that this is the case.
And I would imagine this gets things kind of complicated when we talk about trying to get kids back into schools and dealing with maybe teachers in the classroom, obviously, who are older and maybe more at risk and things along that line, since all these patients could present differently, and it's really hard to kind of determine if we're symptomatic or not in some cases, right?
No, absolutely. And I feel that, you know, it's important, you know, some of the kids really definitely need to get back into the school system. And I agree with kind of this push to get them back. But we really just don't know. But I feel like the school systems themselves are doing very good at trying to protect both the students and their staff in regards to illness and COVID-like illnesses. And so they have a lot of safeguards that they are putting in place from what I've seen. And they do have, you know, quite a few protocols that they have set up to just address any issues that may come up throughout the school day or as we start the school year.
Right. All right. And of course, the other question would be too about school sports, and that's been postponed again, especially contact sports, obviously. And so this just goes along with some of the other high risk activities that we have been hearing about and talking about, unfortunately, and that this could put children at risk, all ages, I suppose.
Yeah, and what I'm seeing too is with this push off for sports has been really more towards the older children, which we do know that, you know, the early teenagers to late teenagers, so that middle school to high school age, they tend to present with COVID symptoms very much like an adult would, and they also have that potential for spreading COVID like an adult would. So I definitely understand that concern and wanting to kind of hold off on sports for the time being until we really just have better awareness of what needs to happen to help prevent the illness from spreading.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also, I have a question about time spent in the vicinity of other children and teachers. And also, there's some new stuff coming out about like room ventilation and how big the room is and how if you sit in the back of a room, you might have a greater shot at spending more time in proximity without catching it. But the longer you spend in a room, the more dangerous that can become.
And what are you reading?
Yeah, this
really?
Actual right. medical right. journals, Scott. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
This is not me making this.
No.
Purely anecdotal. No, I'm just kidding. Actually.
Interesting. No, it's interesting.
It's well founded.
Yeah, it's
not
very
by
detailed.
Me, but by people who know what they're talking about.
Okay.
And so, anyway, right. This is pertinent, I think, because when we're talking about school settings, some grades you have the same classroom for most of the day. Other grades you go in and out and you see a lot more different people. So, what are your thoughts on that?
No, absolutely. And I feel that that's probably why, once again, we haven't seen students back in the schools in middle school and high school, is they're really trying to figure out the logistics behind how do we keep everybody safe when a typical school day for a middle school or high schooler would be to switch classes 7 times a day. And so I think they're really kind of looking at that as to, you know, just how do we keep people safe. And so absolutely, I do feel like that's a concern. And now in terms of ventilation, I mean, definitely there's lots of theories that have been brought forth about how do we keep everybody safe? Are we circulating it just through the schools with the lack of better ventilation? I don't know specifics, but I do know that a lot of the Farmington Public Schools were looking at that ventilation just to ensure that it may not be a concern as we do introduce these elementary kids back into the schools. Now, in regards to time spent, so yes, in theory, the more time that you do spend in a room with somebody who is COVID positive, the potential for transmission does increase. However, what they are finding is that if we do try to social distance as best as possible in the school classrooms with masks, that we do significantly reduce that risk of transmission. And I know that the schools have tried really hard to make sure that those classrooms are at 50% capacity just to ensure that they can just social distance as best as possible when they are in the classroom.
Right, definitely. And I know that a lot of the things that we're talking about, too, was part of those school reopening plans that the state required them to file with the Public Education Department and upgrading some of those HVAC filters and all these things that we are talking about. So we definitely have heard that more than once. Well, Jessica Conklin, we appreciate you calling in. Just a reminder again about this outdoor pediatric respiratory clinic that you're now doing, so parents shouldn't not take their kids in to see you. They can just do it in a different way. That's the whole idea, right?
Absolutely. And we do have one designated provider per afternoon so that they are designated to those sick kids in the afternoon. That way they are not going back and forth between those sick kids and well visits. Just once again to keep everybody safe. But please, yes, if you have any concerns, we absolutely would love to see your child.
Very good. Well, Jessica, thanks so much for joining us. And as always, people can reach our San Juan Health Partners. And so thanks for all the work that you're doing over there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Jessica Conklin again from San Juan Health Partners Pediatrics, our guest here this morning on our COVID-19 Community Information Program.
Yes.
Very good.
We are on the air because we care.
We are, and because we're community supported.
So. Listener powered.
That's right.
So you can join us. I feel like we should say this.
We don't really say it enough, and we probably should, but we feel that, you know, you, the audience, is aware of our funding, which comes from the community. So it is certainly on our website, ksje.com/support, and there are many, many choices of how to support
there
us.
There are.
You can do a one-time gift, a monthly gift. Whatever fits your budget, as we
yes.
say. So we appreciate all yes. the support, for sure. But that's going to wrap up our show today. So
yeah.
thank you all for joining us, everybody. Again, this is rebroadcast at noon on KNMI Radio, 88.9 FM, Vertical Radio. And again, every afternoon when the show airs on Facebook and YouTube at 5:06 p.m. on KSJE. So until Monday, have a great and safe weekend. We'll see you then, everyone. Bye-bye. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.